It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
All right, here we go on a Friday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, and we got Jay Binkley filling in today. Cody will be back on Monday. Bink, what is up, man? It's been a little bit since you and I did a show together.
It's been a few minutes, my friend. How you been doing?
I'm solid. Opening day yesterday. Obviously talk a ton about it. It was gorgeous out there. It was still awesome. The first hot dog of the year tastes better than any other hot dog you'll ever have. I mean, you know, I'm not usually into just grilling hot dogs on my own, but at a ballpark, something's different. It just tastes a little bit different. So we got hot dog number one and number two of the year down. So we're good to go.
I remember having the hot dog down at spring training. One of the first days of spring training.
It tastes different.
It was different because I think it was from last year.
It didn't go over very well.
Yeah. So yeah, well, it was a little bit different. But yeah, you just got to be a little bit careful. But what tournament was awesome?
Oh, sellout crowd. I believe they said it was the biggest opening day crowd since April of 2017, I think that is right.
2017.
So that puts in perspective, and the team coming off a playoff appearance, and of course the weather also contributed to that. It was great just to be back at the ballpark. And even as some of the guys in the clubhouse said after the game, like, it kind of stinks, especially after a win or after a loss, that you have the off day today. We know why they have an off day today, because of the issue of potentially a weather delay or rain out the day before, and you don't want to have a scheduling problem. But it does kind of stink. You get the first game, and then you sit here, and today it's an off day before they get back at it again on Saturday. Although, because of the off day, we are excited to hopefully see all of you guys out at Hollywood Casino a little bit later on tonight, 6 o'clock, Royals Roundtable. Vern will be hosting that with Michael Massey, with Kyle Isbell. They'll be talking all things 2025 Royals. Plus, there's going to be a meet and greet afterwards. And everybody from 96.5 The Fan going to be hanging out there. And we were already talking, I think some Sweet 16 games are going on, so we'll probably be hanging out over at the sportsbook after. So hope to see you guys out there tonight. You do have to be 21 or older to enter. I know some of you have continued to ask about that. It is a casino, so you do have to be 21 or older, but we hope to see all of you out there. The stream is up and running as well on video, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, you name it. Be sure to subscribe. Makes it easy so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. And of course, you can interact with us on the Jay Southlands host service text line as well, 913-586-7965. I want to start with opening day and a couple things. There's a bunch of observations out of one game, and we know how this goes in any sport. The first game is magnified, and so we all take a look at it closer, and you know, everybody has a bit of an overreaction to an opening day, the same way we overreact to the Monday after the first NFL weekend, and everybody thinks they have everything all figured out about the team and about the season, the way things are going to go. We can get into some of that stuff if you want, but let me say this. Other than the obvious, it's game one of 162. And I'm not saying the game doesn't matter, because they made the playoffs by a game or so. So, of course, the game matters. We should not have the same feeling that they better win this weekend or the fans are done or they're in the trouble the way they have been in the past, right? Last year when they started with a couple of losses, or the year before they start with a couple of losses, I remember talking on this show, I remember talking off air with fans, and well, it's like, oh, you're gonna lose some fans if you start 0-3 or you start 0-2. That should not be the feeling we have. And like, hopefully they win Saturday. But the feeling, even if they were to drop another one, it should not be the same. This team was in the playoffs a year ago. They are a flawed baseball team. We have questions. All that is true. But we should not have the same reaction of, oh my gosh, well, I guess they're just there. If they lose a couple games early, they're just done. That was a thought because of the apathy at times that had set in the past, because of the losing over the 7 year period or so. That is something that I firmly think would be ridiculous no matter what happens this weekend. Nobody wants to start 0-1. Nobody wants to start 0-2. Nobody obviously wants to start 0-3. But I don't know how you guys feel. To me, the mindset has to be different based off of the fact that you have a superstar in Bobby Witt Jr. I'm not worried about Cole Reagans just because he wasn't sharp yesterday. There's too many pieces on this team that have now tasted the postseason for us to think, well, I'm out if they don't win one of these games in the next day or two. Like, that's crazy stuff. And it made sense in the past. That, to me, should not be how we approach the next two games this weekend against the Cleveland Guardians.
And the one thing about it, too, is you mentioned last year that 0-2 start. They started off 1-3. They were 1-3 to begin the year. But remember, then everything got healthy again once they went to Chicago. When they went to play the White Sox, which was America's booty call, everybody beat the White Sox, they went on a 7-game run. They went on a 7-game run. A lot of people weren't quite buying into what the Royals were doing yet because they didn't believe in it. They always thought the other shoe would drop with this baseball team, but it turned out to be a good baseball team. Listen, playing the White Sox helped. There's no doubt about it. They're sure going to be. They're not as bad. You can't be as bad as you were last year. They just can be. But you won 12 games. That's a huge swing in the standings, beating one team down like that 12. But the Minnesota Twins, who they opened with last year, and it was a divisional opponent, divisional rival, and they started off the season 1-3. So, no, you don't panic. You don't panic in football either. Drew knows damn well not to panic early in the season because the Bengals never start well. I mean, never
start well.
They're in a hole before it even starts.
3 minutes into Bink taking a shot at Drew. I like it. Guest hosting, 3 minutes in. I like it right away. Well, don't give Drew any time to settle in today.
It's true. Relax, you know?
It's true, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bengals are slow starters.
I'm just saying, like, let's just take a little bit of a deep breath. I want to get into some of the concerns, obviously, but I just wanted to start the show with that. I think we should have a different mindset. I understand in 2022 or 2023, when the team got off to, you know, a bad start, we'd be like, oh my gosh, they can't afford to start this way or everybody's going to check out. That, I don't believe, is what this fan base would do. And last year should be the reason for that. Now, look, observations from yesterday. Let's just start with the obvious because I've already seen multiple texts. Clearly, you cannot be making middle school base running mistakes at the big league level. Clearly, right? Kyle Isbell, Blanco, can't happen. Simply put, like, it was embarrassing. That's a mistake that cannot happen on the base pass. Kyle Isbell, those guys, they're pretty obvious. You don't have to even remind them how bad those decisions were. It was the biggest blunder of the entire game. Like, I'm not worried about Angel Zerpa's one bad pitch that led to an immediate home run. I'm not worried about Cole Reagans not being sharp. I'm not worried about Jonathan India going 0-5 in his debut. He's going to be legit for this team throughout the season. I don't think anybody's worried about Bobby Witt Jr. striking out three times. You know, he struck out three times twice all of last season.
Yeah,
all of last season. So in game 1 of 162, Bobby Witt striking out three times. Yeah, I'm not going to panic on that. What I think is a fair observation to be concerned about and actually could have long lasting implications is what we already knew heading into the year, Bink, which is the outfield offensively. And I guess defensively, too, is going to be the biggest question mark that we have to follow throughout the entire season. Like that, if you want to take that out of yesterday's game, well, that's fair. That's the same questions we had 2 months ago about this team. But some of the other, what I would call one-offs, that's where I think it would be an overreaction if you're worried about Reagans, overreaction if you're worried about some of the things I mentioned, overreaction if you're concerned about anybody that, to me, has already shown who they are as a pro, right? Like there's multiple guys that don't fall in that category. The same questions we had 48 hours ago are the same questions I have today.
Yeah, so same here. But the one thing about the Royals, that margin of error is just not as much as you'd want with this team. It's about doing the little things right. It's about not booting the ball in right field. It's not letting a ball get behind you. That's one thing that's made the Royals so good, is they're good at those little things. How many times have you seen the other team kind of melt down? Just like yesterday when Ramirez kind of booted that ball with Cleveland. Like, that's the stuff you don't expect from the Royals. You know, the other teams find that way to melt down at the end of the games when they should have opportunities, and they don't get those opportunities. Because baseball, you don't get those opportunities. Like the fourth out, getting that extra out for the Royals. But that margin of error is so slim with this team, they just have to be better than everybody else when it comes to the fundamentals. That's what the disappointing thing about some of the outfield plays yesterday. And, of course, that base-running blunder there with Blanco and Isbell.
Yeah, I think the thing with Renfroe yesterday, that, you know, it's one thing at the plate, but defensively, he actually, if you look at his career, has a good arm. Yesterday, though, that arm did not look like the same arm we have seen. I don't know. Again, bad day at the office. That's what, you know, or is that to me is not an overreaction. Anything you say about Hunter Renfroe is not overreacting off of one game, because we have seen some of the concerns from last year. You know, when we talked before the season started on this show about players that, you know, are big swing candidates for the season. None of that changed after yesterday. The big swing candidates that can change the course of the season and, frankly, their career, MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfroe, are two of the names. And yesterday, the same concern you might have about both only increased, right? I think the way they utilized MJ Melendez, though, is probably what we're going to get used to seeing much of the season. Like, the leash could get shorter later on, but Michael Garcia came in and pinch hit for him. India then goes out to left field. Garcia goes to third base. That exact roster move in game, that we're going to probably, I don't know, I'm going to exaggerate. We're going to see that 100 times this year, Bink.
Yeah, there's going to be so much versatility. And as far as left field is concerned, too, I have no doubt you're going to see some India out there, some Massey. I mean, it's going to be a hodgepodge until they finally figure it out. It used to take Ned Yost until, what, end of April into May to kind of figure out, like, his bullpen yeah. and the direction he was going to go. I mean, you got to let things go out. And I think defensively, this team's going to take a while as well.
Yeah, I know Kauffman in the right field corner can be tricky, and Q was asked about it and all that, but like, you know, it's not the first game you played in right field at Kauffman Stadium, and that's where I think it's a fair criticism. One thing that...
That's where you should have the advantage.
Sure. Look, and they compared it to like a hockey rink, right? You know, it kind of, it skips around that wall and can be tricky, but it's you're not playing right field for the first time at Kauffman Stadium. I think that's where I will not push back on anybody's frustration or concern around Hunter Renfroe yesterday. I think there's some other areas where I'll push back. Like someone mentioned Matt Quatrero and some of the decisions he made. We know he's going to be a matchup-driven guy. That's who he is as a manager. And for the most part, it works. It worked last year. Doesn't mean there will not be instances where it doesn't pay off. Yesterday, the decision to walk the kid that most of us have never even heard of until yesterday, to walk Carlos Santana to get to the kid most of them never heard yesterday. The matchup and the data said that was the right decision to walk Santana to lead to the guy that happened to have a hell of a day at the office, Manzardo. Most Royals fans probably had never heard of that guy. I'm just being honest. And now we're acting like, well, how could you ever pitch to him? Like, very easy to say. I understand he had a good day at the office. I have no problem with that decision. I have no problem with him going to Angel Zerpa in that spot either earlier in the game. So some of it is, it's just overreaction. I would call it Monday, overreaction Friday when it comes to opening day baseball.
It's kind of like that column, 40 you win, 40 you're going to lose. Then what are you going to do with the games? Which category are they going to fall into? That's when they should have won. I mean, bottom line, I mean, Cleveland's running into each other defensively. They did it twice. They did it once in the outfield, and they did it once with the catcher. They're running into it. These are the things that you're not expecting the Royals to do. But Cleveland was doing it, and they still came out with the win, which you don't expect that. And not only that, you look at this team, the shutdown guy for Cleveland was the guy that finished third last year in the Cy Young, Emmanuel Clase.
Yeah, they got after him.
Who was torched in the postseason. I mean, he finished last year rough, and it is parlaying itself right in to the 2025 season. That bodes well for Kansas City. You see that, and you're like, okay, what's wrong with Class A? This guy's not as dominant as he's been. They relied on him because their offense was so putrid last year at times with Cleveland. It came down to having that one-run lead and getting to the ninth and Class A coming in with that .61 ERA and doing his job. But I felt, you know, that was one of my takeaways is, okay, there's Cleveland, you know, one of the teams in the division where you're looking at them. How strong is Class A going to be? How strong is this bullpen going to be with Cleveland? Because that's what's going to have to carry him because that lineup's not great.
913-586-7965. We're going to talk opening day throughout the entire show. Jake Eisenberg, of course, you heard him yesterday right here on 96.5 The Fan on the call. He's going to join us as he will every Friday. We're excited this season. We're going to have Vern earlier in the week on Wednesdays like we do every single season, and it'll be great to talk to Vern every Wednesday. Well, every Friday, Bink, during the season at 10:30, we're going to have Jake Eisenberg join us. So we're excited to have him get his perspective on the season as well. One final thought before we pivot away from the Royals briefly. If we're going to point out some of the negative stuff as well, I will say then out of the positive end of yesterday, I think you do have to love what you saw from Hunter Harvey, Estevez, and Urseg. We've talked about how the bullpen could be a strength this season. And while everybody's focusing in on obviously unacceptable base running and the one pitch from Angel Serpa, Hunter Harvey, who last year was not healthy, thought he was the big trade acquisition. We haven't really seen it in a Royals uniform. It's only one game for him. So much like how I said, let's be cautious about any negative stuff. Let's not act like everything's perfect in the bullpen either from Hunter Harvey. But in his one game of 2025 sample size that we have and the one inning, Hunter Harvey looked like what we thought Hunter Harvey was going to be last year. Lucas Urseg looked like Lucas Urseg, and Carlos Estevez looked like a guy that you're paying the kind of money you're paying. So those were some positives. Today, I wish they were playing because it allows this to linger for 24 hours or so. Saturday and Sunday out of Kauffman Stadium. Hopefully they can get their first wins of the season and get their second win on Sunday, that is, as well, if they can take care of this on Saturday.
So you'll probably have to play their original opening day starter at some point through the week.
The food poisoning. Did you see his tweet? So people tagged us in this. So Bibee did not pitch. We all know that yesterday.
Yeah, Bibee was food poisoning. I'm with you. I don't even know if he made the trip because I would
speculate
that he didn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It sounds like maybe the Royals even knew the night before, like, that he wasn't going to, you know, maybe they even knew more. Yeah,
Bibee went there.
Yeah, but Bibee sent out a tweet last night and said, quote, "Stop talking about at Chipotle tweets like that. Sick before I could even think about a bowl." Because I guess Tanner Bibee's a big Chipotle guy. I can relate. Not as much as I used to be,
though. The day before he pitches.
Mm-hmm. He said it wasn't that. I had Chipotle last night for dinner, actually.
He said it wasn't.
Yeah.
There was talk that he didn't even make it to Kansas City.
Yeah. So that food poisoning may have been in Cleveland or wherever they were, wherever their exhibition game was before. I don't know. You know, the Royals were in Arlington. I don't know where Cleveland was the
so
night
before. So they can't blame it on Kansas City barbecue or anything else. No one sabotaged Cleveland.
That's right.
I'm sure there's somebody in Cleveland, you know, going with this weird Chiefs conspiracy theory with Kansas City and thinking, oh, they poisoned them. They don't care. They don't care about Bibee. Trust me.
Yeah, so we'll see tomorrow, by the way. Royals back in action. Vern's on deck show. What starts, what is that going to be, around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon? What's the first pitch scheduled for tomorrow? We'll check in on them the exact time, I think. And we'll let you guys know when Vern will be on the deck.
I just know the Royals schedule is very nice around the draft.
You've already gone and looked?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean by very nice around the draft?
Well, I got to see, you know, when we're going to be.
Bank's not going to be bothered, you know. He's not going to be busy.
We'll be doing character concerns over.
Oh, I know that.
6-5, so, you know, the draft night.
You're full excited. There's no conflict.
Friday, there's a conflict. But then Saturday is like 6 hours of draft coverage.
Oh, gosh.
Because the Royals don't play till that evening.
Oh, gosh.
The Royals have been very nice about this draft. That's a very good positive.
I'm sure the Royals were thinking exactly along those lines. Let's hope we don't interrupt the NFL draft with our schedule.
Well, they kind of did, you know, when the draft was here in Kansas City, you know, you got to think about those things.
That's right. That's right. We'll get back to the Royals with Jake Eisenberg coming up at 10:30 here on Cody and Gold. I want to talk about the Sweet 16. I know Drew's fired up to talk about this. Sweet 16 began last night. Of course, we got four more games tonight. But last night, two stories out of it. Number one, the best game of the night was one of the late games, and the late game of the night, and that was the Texas Tech Red Raiders coming back against Arkansas, getting the win in overtime. Arkansas led by 13 with about 4.5 minutes to go in the game.
A total of 16 they had led, which is the second most ever blown lead in the Sweet 16.
Led by 6 with 1:10 to go. Tech comes all the way back, forces overtime, then they win by 2. It's the Red Raiders in the Elite 8 now. They're going to take on Florida tomorrow evening. A trip on to the Final Four in San Antonio on the line. Look, I thought Coach Cal was going to somehow take Arkansas to an Elite Eight after all this, which was remarkable he even got him to this position. And Texas Tech still didn't have their second or third best player playing. I guess he's just probably not going to play this entire tournament
at this point in time.
But Arkansas should have won that game. I'll give you guys full disclosure on this. I had to go back this morning and watch highlights of overtime. I did not end up staying up for that game. We were at the Royals and everything all day yesterday, and I was like, I can't. I'm like, I'm out.
Long day.
I had to tap out. I usually I'm not that guy. I had to tap out, so I had to wake up. I woke up to a couple texts. And we'll check in on our bracket challenge as
that
well.
That Duke-Arizona game actually got...
I did watch that, yeah.
Duke kind of pulls away, but it got really interesting there for a while. Like, it got within 5 points.
Yeah.
You're thinking, oh, a couple of threes, Caleb Love, start to get hot, they start draining them in with Arizona, but yeah, Texas took over, but the bottom line is, it was interesting. I mean, the end of that game had some intrigue to it.
It did. No, I mean, Cooper Flag and Duke, if you felt
the
a certain
stars
way,
are being the stars in this tournament, just like Sears at Alabama. I mean, you're expecting big-time performances from big-time players, and they're delivering.
However you felt about Duke, you know, the hours before the game, your opinion on could they win a title and all that, nothing should have changed yesterday with that. I mean, Duke did what they needed to do, obviously. And as far as Texas Tech, I don't know. I almost have more confidence in them getting to where I think they can get to come back.
Such
they looked
win.
So bad in the first half. Yep. They looked awful. Like they were going to get run out of the building bad. And again, as you said, they were down 16 at one point in time. And for them to come all the way back, I'm not worried about them like being out of gas for the game tomorrow. It's a little bit different.
Teams like Bama and away, if they're not hitting threes. I mean, they shot 32 of them last night. I mean, that's what Texas bombs away.
Yeah, it was interesting how much they've shifted from the first game that they played against UNC Wilmington, where they chucked up a lot of threes, to Drake. They just went down low and just out-physicaled them. And then going back to this one, and when Arkansas too, they averaged like 7 threes, and they had 7 in the first half. So Arkansas was playing great. They were playing a little bit better than what they had beforehand. I think, you know, to your point, Gold, of them being able to, while being a man down, to still come back and win that game. I think Chris McCaslin has just been outstanding.
They had three guys hit 20 points or more.
Yeah, so it'll be Texas
True
Tech.
Freshman Christian Anderson also having himself a couple good months. He had a really good Big 12 tournament as well for Texas Tech.
Tech in Florida, going to play in the Elite Eight tomorrow. And then the early game was Alabama and BYU. We knew that was going to be the game that had the most points the entire weekend, and it was the highest total. It's 175 points, and it went over by what, 30 plus points or so. Craziness. And if you're BYU, it's one of those where like you had no chance to win that game if you're going to face a team like that. Alabama hit a record amount of three last night, and when that happens, you mentioned Mark Sears, no chance. I mean, I didn't think BYU played that bad. I didn't think BYU played all that bad offensively, certainly. And Alabama, to score that many points, what was it, 113 was the final?
Yes. Yep.
To score 113 in a Sweet 16 game is insane.
They took 66 shots last night. 51 were three-pointers. It almost is sickening where if they were on, with how many threes they took, if they were hot, nobody's going to beat them. It didn't matter whether it was Duke, whether it was BYU, Auburn, whoever it was.
Well, Sears is a good player, and he kept hitting him.
Well, yeah.
But then
he got
a little too confident, too, because he's sitting there, like, way beyond the arc. I mean, he was
at that point, though, I mean.
If you're hot, Bink, you're hot, and you're just firing.
He was taking something like, whoa, I know you're hitting him, but, man, be careful.
Yeah. I think last night really delivered, I think, in terms of this is what you expect a Sweet 16.
You get better matchups when you don't have the upsets.
I know that a lot of people love the upsets, and every now and then you see an underdog still hang in there, but we've seen – you know, St. Peter's being in this situation where they get torched by 30 points in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. And, you know, you wonder what kind of could have been if that would have, you know, in terms of the quality of games. And we got some good quality games yesterday. I'm sure tonight will deliver just the same.
Alabama Duke will be tomorrow, a trip to the Final Four on the line. Duke 6.5 point favorite tomorrow. Also Texas Tech 6.5 point underdog to Florida. We've got four games tonight. I'll point out we have our Coding Gold bracket challenge, Bink, that we did. I don't know if you submitted a bracket this year or not, but I want to check in on a couple listeners. Remember, Wings for a Year on the line plus a prize pack. Jacob E is our current leader. He has Houston winning it all, so they're obviously playing a little bit later on. And he still has a max amount of points of 183. Really impressive.
Wow.
Jake R has Duke winning. He's in second. He can get a max of 178. Philip B is tied for second. He can get 178. He has Houston winning. And then Kerry, Clinton, Tanner, and Eric are all tied for fourth. Basically, Duke or Florida is what you're looking for there. So congrats to basically the top five right now.
All on the line tonight.
Drew, you moved up a little bit. Drew was in the bottom 10 out of everybody.
Thank you, Michigan State.
At least you made a run. I think this tournament shows us a couple things. One, I wouldn't expand it. There's zero reason to expand this. Whenever you have four conferences represented in the Sweet 16, that was it. Four conferences. But you're not going to see the upsets again because gone are the days of Iona and South Dakota State having guys play for four years for the team. Because what they're doing is they're all even. You have a good game in the tournament or good through the season. You're at another school, man. You've been at Sturt's in that stuff. You're going from Drake, and then you're going to Iowa. You're going actually Northwest Missouri State to Drake, and then to Iowa. But you're not going to have the core group of players to play with each other 4 years that you used to really enjoy with these deals. The transfer portal has changed how the NCAA tournament is. It's completely different. And to acknowledge is what you have to do.
I agree with it for the most part. We talked about on Monday's show that I don't think we're now never going to see ones, twos, threes, or fours lose the first weekend. We had it happen in 2017 before NIL. So I don't think now every year that it's just going to be the first four seeds automatically advance to the Sweet 16. But I am with you that clearly NIL has had a factor in what the NCAA tournament is, whether they expand or not. And yes, it is that if you are a freshman at it, we keep using Iona as an example as well. I don't know why. We did it too on Monday. Freshman, it's because Clayton, the kid from Florida, was at Iona before. Yeah. I think that's why. If you are a freshman at Iona, you're not staying for a second or third year. You're transferring after your very first year. Before you would have stayed Sturt's for a couple of years.
From Liberty, you've been at Sturt's. Yeah. Who was at Northwest.
Yeah.
And then he follows McCollum up to Drake. Guess what? He's not coming back to Drake next year.
I know, Bink.
He's going to Iowa.
I know, Bink, but the mid-major schools are utilizing the portal as well because, you know, they have to. Obviously, you know, they might lose guys, but they're not, it's not, the portal's not killing college basketball the way that a lot of people are talking about it. Because if you look at what Drake did, Drake brought in D2 transfers and beat a school that brought in a Duke transfer as well as others. So the idea that it's just going to go away doesn't make any sense to me, because just the same that other top schools are, like Ole Miss, really good example. They're bringing in a lot of portal guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're advancing and they're playing really well, but just the same Ole Miss guys that aren't available to play anymore, or guys that are Power Five that don't have as much playing time, they go down a level and they play. Like Memphis had 7 Power Five players on their roster this year that helped them get to the tournament and get to be a 5 seed. So the idea that
Memphis didn't win a tournament game.
I understand that, but Colorado State, a mid-major, beat them just the same. So I feel like
is funny that they were considered. They were on 11 game winning streak, by the way, Colorado State. That's why the whole seeding was a joke. With
yeah,
them,
but Colorado State was never going to be above a 9 or a 10. They were always going to be that way. I and also I think of all the four number one seeds, Michigan State, I don't think has a single solitary player on their roster that didn't go to Michigan State or start there.
Somebody Purdue, put out a really good chart.
It was a great graphic.
There's a graphic Purdue, out there. Yeah.
Purdue and Houston and all the number one overall seeds, at least half of the players that play for them started at their respective school. So again, it's not like Auburn's going and
exception.
Getting everybody.
But that's so you're
it's not like Purdue is going and getting everybody in the portal. Yeah. They're getting maybe one guy or two guys.
But that one star is transferring and he's changing the team.
The Michigan State but it was is all, the it was exception. All,
it
true.
Was always that way. Bink, the last time this happens was 2007. The portal didn't exist in 2007. So I think that there's a right. For us to just jump to the conclusion of all of this, the portal existed when Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue in the greatest upset that we've ever seen. So you can't jump to the conclusion after just one season.
So,
well, JT Toppin of Texas Tech, by the way, he was in New Mexico first. Yeah, so you see what I'm saying? I mean, look what he's doing for the tournament.
I was going to say, Michigan State's the one exception, though, if we're going to highlight they're in it and their team.
And Tom Izzo's always been that way, by the way.
The graphic that was put out there the other day, and it was the remaining Sweet 16 teams. This was before yesterday, and it was their starting fives. Michigan State had four of their five starters were not non-homegrown guys, right? We're not from the transfer portal. But that was the exception.
Yes.
Auburn had all five different schools. Michigan, all five from different schools. Ole Miss, all five four of the five from different schools, I should say.
Ole Miss
Florida,
is the example you want to use.
Yeah, Florida.
Or Tech.
Florida had one player from their starting five that started in their program. Maryland had two players. Texas Tech has one. Arkansas had one. Duke has one, or has four of their five. I'm sorry. Arizona has none from their starting five that started the program. BYU even, right?
BYU. What do you mean? Arizona has three guys that top eight players.
This is the graphic. Arizona.
Arizona has three out of their top eight players in minutes per game that started at Arizona.
Then this graphic is wrong for Arizona, but right for everybody else.
Who's the best at Texas Tech?
Purdue is the only school in this example, Drew.
Every single player.
We're going to have the same graphic, I think, right? Like
I think so.
I'm the same graphic. And
top eight players by minutes per game?
No, this is where every
I'm looking at minutes per game.
Where every Sweet 16 starting five began playing college basketball.
Yeah, I'm looking at every player, the top eight players by minutes.
Well, here's the thing, though. Michigan State
we got to get to
wins by 8 points. Okay, Toppin was at New Mexico last year. He's crushing things with Texas Tech. Now, what if he stays in New Mexico? Do they have a chance to beat Michigan State?
Yeah, but it's not like New Mexico, it's not like New Mexico stunk, though. They made the tournament and almost made the Sweet 16.
But Toppin played for New Mexico. If he was still with New Mexico, that'd be a different team.
We'll get back to this, I promise, a little bit later on in the show. Up next, I want to get back to the Royals. Jake Eisenberg is going to join us each and every Friday throughout the baseball season, one of the voices of the Royals. You heard him yesterday on that Vinny Pasquantino home run call. He joins us next.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student-athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The 1-1 pitch. Pasquantino hits it high in the air, deep to right field. Noel's back, onto the track, at the fence, it's out of here! Vinny Pasquantino hits a three-run homer for the Royals' first runs of 2025.
Jake Eisenberg on the call yesterday right here on 96.5 The Fan. In mid-season form, Jake, mid-season form right away with the Vinny call. What's going on? You're going to join us each and every Friday throughout the season, so we're excited to kick things off today.
Hey, yeah, no, I appreciate that very much. And, yeah, hey, that's what spring training's for, right? At least that's the idea.
Yeah.
And I'm excited that we get to hang out once a week now, at least once a week, you know?
Exactly. No doubt about that. All right, look, it I don't have to tell you, it's much like NFL Monday after the first Sunday of the year. There's a little overreaction after one game. Opening day is special, but that also means everything is magnified. What is your thoughts on where we're at with game one of 162?
Well, how about this? I'll give you my sports talk radio overreaction. And I was, you know, headed out of the ballpark and I ran into Tom Hamilton, the now Hall of Fame voice of the Cleveland Guardians. Tammy's one of the best, and it was cool to visit him before the game. And he said to me as we were going out, he's like, sorry, Jake, you can't go undefeated this year. And I said, I guess we'll try again next year.
Yeah.
So there's my overreaction. Won't be 162-0 this year. We'll try it again next year. But hey, you can go 1-1 starting on Saturday.
The one thing that fans obviously have focused in on, and I get this, which is the base running error there from Isbell and Blanco. You've been around these guys. You've been around baseball for a long time. I mean, I think you would say, of course, like that's something that just cannot happen at this level. But what did you see on that sequence in the game?
Yeah, and I appreciated the way, you know, Q explained it after the game about the contact play, because I know that was a source of frustration at times last season. You know, Blanco going on contact there, as Q said, is to really say, okay, Guardians, you're going to get one out here, but you're not going to get two. That's the idea. And, you know, a throw home isn't necessarily a given thing. You know, you never know what's going to happen. You saw with Hunter Gaddis on Isbell's bunt, you know, that should be a sacrifice bunt. You take the out at first, but, well, they didn't make that play. So who's to say that they would have made that play necessarily? And I think what it has to do with Kyle Isbell coming around second, there's also a school of thought where if Blanco's in that rundown and he's headed back toward home plate and Jose Ramirez or whoever else is chasing him back to home, then Izzy has a chance to get to third and at least get to third to sort of replace Blanco there if the Guardians are going to get that one out. And I haven't talked to Kyle. I didn't hear any of his postgame comments, but I'm assuming that's kind of what was in his brain, seeing Blanco headed back toward home plate. And Jose Ramirez was just able to put the tag on Blanco so quickly that Izzy was caught in no man's land around second.
Jake, what can you kind of glean from Cleveland? This division's going to be so tight with the different teams that they have, but you get this closer, this amazing closer that they have, finishes third in the Cy Young, was so good last year, that .61 ERA. And then he was torched for 8 earned runs and 8 innings in the postseason and didn't exactly lock things down. I mean, is that cause for concern for Cleveland? Because I think that's an advantage for Kansas City when you see that they can get to Emmanuel Clase.
Well, I'll tell you what, as the game was unfolding, I'm sitting there in the booth thinking, you know, it's like that meme. They can't keep getting away with this. And like this bullpen last year for the Guardians was so, so good. And I was definitely one of the people that thought that bullpen was going to wane down the stretch. And they did to some degree, but they were still the best bullpen in baseball last year. And I'm thinking, okay, there's no way they can run it back with the same guys and have the same kind of success, nasty as they are, and they were nasty again yesterday, and they got away with it, even though the Royals did get to Emmanuel Clase. And look, Clase is one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, certainly one of the best relievers in all of baseball, but there is that old adage with baseball, if the hitter knows what's coming, then they can time it up, whether it's 80 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, or even 110 miles an hour. And I think it was the first 7 or 8 pitches Emmanuel Clase threw, every single one was a 99-mile-an-hour cutter. I'm not saying that that's an easy pitch to hit. Far from it. That is an otherworldly pitch and very difficult to hit. But as a hitter at the major league level, if you know what's coming, you've got such a better chance of doing something than you do if you're up there guessing. And if you can sit on a 99-mile-an-hour cutter, like it seemed like Vinny Pasquantino was doing when he came to the plate to lead off that inning, you know, he got one and yanked it foul, and then he got one and pulled it down the line, you know, there's a better chance of success. So I'd be curious to see specifically with Clase how much he mixes it up going forward. That could just be, you know, some early season rust or early season, you know, lack of, you know, super fine command. But, you know, we saw from the Guardians bullpen yesterday, the only guy that allowed a hit was Emmanuel Clase. And I'd be willing, you know, to say for the Guardians bullpen, that's the one guy you're probably not worried about over the course of 162.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. He's going to join us every Friday at 10:30 throughout the baseball season. Thinking of guys you're not worried about, we were going through the list of, you know, how much we take away from an opening day performance. Like, I'm not worried about Cole Reagans not being so sharp yesterday. Jonathan India, 0-for-5. I'm really not concerned about that. What did you see from, you know, Jonathan India when you were out in Arizona? Because he got tested right away at third base. I mean, the first two balls in play were to Jonathan India.
I'll tell you what, I mean, Jonathan India looked great at third base in spring training. And I thought he looked pretty darn good over there at third base yesterday, too. And I mean, let's remember, this was his first, not just his first career start at third base, this was his first career game at third base at the major league level. He played a lot of third base in the minors when he was coming up through the Reds organization. He's got a lot of experience on the left side of the infield in college and the minors as well. So it's not like this was his first day in his life over at third base. It was just his first game in the big leagues at third base, and he did look pretty good over there during spring training. And depending upon how the Royals want to shuffle the lineup and, you know, make sure that Jonathan India is in the lineup, and, you know, depending upon Michael Garcia getting the lineup, you'd expect him to play a good amount of third base. I think we could see India playing third a decent amount, and I thought he looked pretty good over there.
Do you think what we also saw in that game, I can't remember the exact inning, but when India shifted to left field and Melendez was pinch hit for by Michael Garcia, and so then Michael's playing third, that exact sequence, I feel like we're going to see that a ton throughout the season, at least the beginning portion of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to MJ Melendez, it's unclear how many opportunities he's going to get against left-handed pitching. He's always been much better against right-handed pitching, as you'd expect for a left-handed hitter. And so when you have right-handed hitters on the bench like Mark Canha and yesterday Michael Garcia, and Freddie Fermin, would not be surprised to see him get some pinch-hit opportunities depending upon the game situation. We know how Q likes to use the roster and likes to use all 13 position players, you know, to find the best matchups and the best chances to win. And so, yeah, I think that sequence was relatively unsurprising. If there was one surprising part about it, or one part about it that I think you could look at and say, oh, that was definitely an option. This also could have been an option, could have gone either way. You could have seen Mark Canna pinch it in that situation and then simply go to left field and leave India at third base. But it, you know, it's kind of like 6-1, half a dozen the other.
What are they going to do about Tanner Bibee? You going to see him the rest of this weekend at some point? Is he getting healthy?
He wasn't listed as the probable starter for tomorrow. That's Gavin Williams, and Luis Ortiz is initially listed as the Sunday starter. I haven't gotten word yet or seen any reporting on whether or not Bibee's going to go on either Saturday or Sunday. I mean, off day today, hopefully he's feeling better, you know, for Tanner Bibee's sake. I mean, look, opening day, you want the best of the best of the best, and that's nothing against Ben Lively, who did pitch really well for the Guardians, but, you know, there's some juice in ace against ace, and you really feel for a guy that just signed a big-time extension and is getting his first opening day start and then, you know, winds up with food poisoning or something. That's just a bummer.
Last food poisoning incident for you, Eisenberg. Do you recall? It was a recent food poisoning anywhere? You go on the road a lot on these road trips.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do. And ironically enough, I think the last time it happened to me was in Milwaukee.
Okay.
When we were there a couple of years ago. No. And that's our first road trip this year.
Yeah.
Look, that's all to say that there aren't only ghosts that are haunting the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. There's a ghost of dinner past that I'm not looking forward to seeing again.
You don't have to name the restaurant. I don't expect that. But what kind of food are we talking about then?
I think that I don't really remember.
Okay.
I think it was some sort of like, you know, I want to say kind of Mexican food-ish. Ill-advised, to be fair. Ill-advised.
Good. Good stuff there. What do you think the MO of this team is going to be this year, though, Jake? Do you see the steals, the stolen bases like we saw last year? Bobby Witt ended up getting over 30 stolen bases. Is he going to lead the way? Do you see the power surge coming eventually, I guess, if Caglione gets up to Kansas City? Because to me, I see these guys, you know, competitive, you know, throughout the year, putting up numbers and seeing what the other guy puts up. Like we saw the 15 Royals, the pitchers would go out and try to one-up their pitchers from the day before.
Yeah, I think the key word for this 2025 Royals team is pressure. This is a team that is going to put pressure on the other team, and they're going to do that in all sorts of ways. They're going to do that on the bases. They're going to put pressure on the opposing pitcher and opposing catcher by using their speed on the bases, and also against, you know, the other seven fielders by taking that extra base when they have the chance to do so. You know, base running was a huge part of the Royals' success last year, and it figures to be again this year. They're going to put pressure on the opposing pitcher when you've got a runner on third and less than two outs and Vinny Pasquantino's at the plate. That's a lot of pressure on the pitcher to make perfect pitches against the guy who rakes with runners in scoring position and knows what his job is, and that is to bring a run home. And then I think you're going to see Royals pitchers put pressure on opposing hitters, you know, in various situations. You know, if there's a runner on third and two outs and you need to strand that guy, you're going to see some power pitches, you know, from anybody, whether it's Hunter Harvey or Carlos Estevez or Lucas Irsay, whoever's coming out of the bullpen. I think pressure is going to be the key for this Royals season. And I think that there's also a rising to the pressure that the Royals, you know, may or may not feel about the expectations this year. I don't think that there is any pressure that is felt. I want to be very clear in saying that. I just think that pressure overall is a theme this season for the Royals. The pressure they're going to put on opponents, and maybe I'll say this more accurately, I think pressure fans might feel about the expectations for this team, because I don't think that's something that the team feels very much.
Jake Eisenberg, Royals broadcaster. Of course, you heard him yesterday here on 96.5 The Fan. You'll hear him here throughout the season, also on FanDuel Sports Network Kansas City. And Jake, appreciate it, man. We'll check in every Friday. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and hopefully the food treats you better in Milwaukee on Monday.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks, guys. Hopefully every week we can lead in with a Vinny Pasquantino home run the day before.
Let's do it. There you go. That's Jake Eisenberg with us here on 96.5 The Fan. And look, I think you asked just kind of about the expectations, and he said it. Maybe it's more about the fans and that are feeling. That's what we kind of started the show talking about, where fans have expectations. Some people think they're maybe too high, maybe they're too low. And that's why, even though it's game one of 162, you already saw, you can read the text line as well, Bink.
Jonathan India stuff too.
We're going to get back into it in 15 minutes. There's some stuff that I think is a valid, like really, really valid season-long concern, right? The outfield. Jonathan India, I'm not worried about an 0-for-5 day at the office.
He led Cincinnati in on-base percentage, 21st in Major League Baseball. That is why you went out and made the move. That's what he does well. That's what you're going
to
have.
I would have loved for him to have his welcome to Kansas City moment in terms of a positive way, when he was coming up to bat.
This happens in mid-June, you don't care.
Yeah, when they had runners on the corner and nobody out in the eighth, like it felt like that could have been that moment where he came through with a big hit. Sure, we all would have loved that. He would have loved that to be the case. Instead, it ended up being the sequence that had the terrible base running mistakes from Isbell and Blanco that we talked about. We'll get back to the Royals here in 15 minutes right here on 96.5 The Fan. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Jay Binkley filling in for Cody Tapp today. Let's talk some NFL. We got Bink in here. We got to talk a little NFL as well. And there was some rumors about rule changes happening. These still have to be approved, but the one that seems like it has the most momentum is a slight tweak to the kickoff rule. We all know last year they changed the kickoff, the landing zone, and everything became a thing.
This is dumb.
2 weeks into the season, I was talking to Drew about this before the show, like 2 weeks into the season last year, we had a discussion on this program that, hey, this isn't enough of a deterrent. Why wouldn't I just keep kicking it in the end zone? While kickoffs were up last year, they went up. That is something that did occur. It didn't go up enough. And having the touchback be at the 30 was not enough of a deterrent. So it was like, you got to move that to 35 or 40. Well, the rule change that they're talking about, the tweak, will be a touchback to the 35 to try to incentivize more returns, as in the team that's kicking off is actually going to try to get the ball in the landing zone versus being like, fine, we'll just kick it through the end zone, not have to worry about coverage. And we'll take it. We'll let them take it at the 30. That was too easy. Now you go to the 35 if this passes, which I think it will. And you force something here from the kicking team. And if not, well, then the team's already got the 35. I mean, it could lead to some more scoring as well, which we know everybody loves. So I love the fact they're tweaking this for those that are saying, hey, well, this is dumb. It's too easy to do that. Well, that's why they're adding it to deter teams from just being fine with the touchback as a result. And they're never going back to the old kickoff. So this has to work. They believe this will increase kickoffs to over 60% next year. We'll see if that actually
60
happens.
60 to 70%. Yeah. They're pretty high on this. But kick it back from the 35. Move the kick back. I love what Belichick said about this last year. Just move the kick back and keep everything the same. So the rate was 21.8%.
Okay.
And it moved to 32.8% as far as kickoff returns. But the average kickoff return was 27.8 yards. So essentially, it's just better off going ahead and giving them to them at the 30 because it's essentially the median average in the NFL world was. So they'll do this. The one thing I like, and I was like, okay, this is cool. This is, if you're going to keep these stupid kickoffs the way they are, don't change the chess match of the game of football, the onside kick. That's the one thing. You always want to have hope. You just always want to have hope that you can go down. It's like when you have that two-point conversion now, like the fact that you can go down there and get those 2 points. Or it's like in college basketball to hit the three-point shot, if that's your mantra. But the onside kick, that we've seen the Saints do it in the Super Bowl, and we've seen teams come out in the second half, and it's guys like Dave Tobe, why they were in such demand. They watch film and see tendencies of what teams do. So right now, you have to be trailing, and it had to be fourth quarter before you declared an onside kick.
Stupid.
So you hear, okay, they're going to change things. They're going to let them do onside kicks now. Anyway, a couple things I have a problem with. One, you got to be trailing. I don't think you should have to be trailing to do an onside kick. I think you should be able to do it whenever you want. Whether you have the lead, whether you're tied, whatever, I don't think you should have a deficit to do the onside kick. I just don't. But then you have to declare it. I mean, it's a little bit... It's like declaring an eligible receiver.
That's how they
view it. It's a lineman's an eligible
receiver.
That's
what they're saying.
Yeah, but to declare it is not catching anybody off guard, and it changes the complexion of what football is. Because a lot of times you have that kick return team moving back, especially in the second half. They're not exactly staying up with the hands team up front, but it changes it. But I always thought the onside kick should benefit both sides. Whether you have the lead or not, you can build a bigger lead by doing it, but you shouldn't have to have a deficit. And then when you declare it, what are we doing here? What are we doing here?
The declaring part, I'll give you. They'll claim safety, right? That's what this whole kickoff switch has been. I'm with you. I'm glad that, and I think these are both going to pass, by the way. I think these rule changes, the kickoffs are going to pass. I think you're with me on that. But the declaring part, yeah, it seems a little crazy. Now they're going to tweak it, though, as you said, that you can do it before the fourth quarter. I think that's important. That's a nice tweak. I don't think the whole kickoff is never going to be what we all want it to be.
But do you feel like both teams should be able to do it, whether they have a lead or not?
No team's going to do it if they have the lead at this point. You're saying Sean Payton in the Super Bowl, I understand, but not under these. Not if I have to declare it, they're not. Both teams aren't going to do it. If you have to declare, why would I do an onside kick if I'm up? I'm not. So I don't. It doesn't really bug me whether or not the team trailing or not can do it. If I'm having to declare it, there's no team that's up 14 points in the third quarter if I have to declare going to kick it onside. No chance.
It's an advantage that you can get through watching film, seeing the tendencies of their team. It's like the tush push. You know, I know they're trying to eliminate that. At least Green Bay is. They put the proposal in. But you perfect things and you do things that are within the rules and you go out and do them. It's like baseball. We saw the shift so prevalent for so long because it worked. It worked against teams, so you figure out a way to do things. And I declaring a kickoff is always been dumb to me. It's one of the best things about football. The element of coming back, being able to have a comeback towards the end by being able to do it. I'd be honest with you, I'd just rather sit there and you have one shot at 25 yards down the field, you know, a fourth down. That's more of a chance than declaring an onside kick. Because we have about 3%. Getting the onside kicks last year.
It's kind of a waste of time. Yeah. Someone's like, can you just declare it and still kick it deep? But no, I think you get a. Well, I don't know what the penalty is on that.
That'd be an interesting strategy.
What's the rule? Is it a re-kick, Bink? Is it just 15 yards from the kicking spot?
Never seen anybody
declare. Hey, you declared the onside. You still kicked it deep. Yeah. What's the penalty? Is it just a redo or is it actually unsportsmanlike? I don't know. Like, what would they rule?
I mean, there's some strategy behind it, though, because if everybody's expecting it and you kick it deep, if you got somebody who's fast who can get around a blocker and just go get the ball themselves. I mean, there's some strategy in there.
The new playoff seeding, I could see, actually. I like that. I don't know if it's going to pass, but I like it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the playoff seeding discussion. To me, winning your division should mean something. I don't care what your record is. I understand there's always years where there's exceptions that it seems crazy that a team that only won 9 games or 10 games gets a home game, but like winning your division still, I don't like taking that out of sports. Like winning your division should mean something. The NFL schedule is actually pretty damn balanced compared to most leagues. If you think about how they go about the thought process with it, I don't like that. I don't know if that's going to pass, but these kickoff changes are going to. We should have, I think I'll have you do some digging on the kickoff change because that's a good question for somebody. I'm guessing it's just a re-kick or an unsportsmanlike penalty. If you declare an onside kick and you still kick it deep.
Never seen somebody do it.
Is the only professional league that doesn't really deal with divisions like that, the NBA?
The NBA has divisions, just nobody knows about it or cares about them.
Because they don't matter.
The Pacific Division doesn't mean anything or whatever. Correct. Atlantic Division.
Yeah, the way the NBA works doesn't matter. Because I think because baseball, if you win your division, it matters in terms of playoff seeding. If in the NHL, I think winning your division also matters in terms of playoff seeding. In the NBA, it doesn't mean a
just
darn
west
thing.
West and east.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It might be very similar to calling a fair catch and then running the football. You know, you've seen guys do that. It looks like they're
going to
fair catch.
That's a penalty.
Yes, it's a penalty.
So that's probably what
it is. So I could see some.
So what, it's a 15-yard penalty from the spot, and that's where the team gets it?
I don't know. Again,
it's probably 15 yards from the kick, or you can make them
Steratore on the line.
Yeah, we'll get to the bottom of this. We're going to get to the bottom of this before the end of the show. I promise you. We will try. Bink's going to be reaching out to his buddy Gene. Yeah, he'll call his former official.
Why is he doing basketball, by the way?
Because he's always done basketball.
I know, but
he's always done both. I mean, nice check for him year round.
No kidding.
He's making some good money.
No kidding.
Him and Blandino, like, they don't have the pressure of getting calls wrong anymore. They just get to tell everybody how the officials are never wrong. You know, that's what they get to do now. It's a great gig. Really is. Up next, we'll get back to some Royals opening day. We know it's Overreaction Friday, but what actually concerns you the most out of opening day? We'll take your texts and calls if you want to chime in, 913-586-7965. And one big change could be coming to baseball when it comes to consuming the product. We'll explain that next.